Hi, I'm Jessica St. Clair.
And I'm June Diane Raphael.
And this is
The Deep Dive.
We're about to do what women have done for centuries. We're crowding around the fire with our generous haunches. We got babies hanging off our tits, and we're going to share with you our fears.
That's right. Our joys.
Our tips on how to stay alive.
Now, Jess, we are heeding a call that no one has made.
Not a soul, but you're invited to listen.
Absolutely, because we make one promise and one promise only. We will not Google a thing.
Because frankly, we're too damn tired.
Please get ready to go on
The Deep Dive.
Hi, Jessica.
June.
Wow. So we have something today.
Oh, man. I'm so excited. I feel like, well, here's the deal. So we've got Julia Louis-Dreyfus coming on. And I feel this way every time I know I'm going to see her. I get so fucking excited. And I'm feeling really excited right now because I get to share her with you. Now, I know she gets shared with the world, but I just get to share.
She gets passed around from person to person.
She does. She does.
Well, I just want to tell our listeners, because this is an audio medium, which I have to remind myself, that you've arrived barefaced. You know,
yeah, because I don't
have a relationship you have with Miss JLD. And my hair is now up in a bun because I couldn't focus and I was feeling nervous. So I had to, you know, put it up to think.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I did put on a full face of makeup.
I thought you got glam.
You know what? I considered it because that's who this legend is to me and to us, and is deserving of looking at something pleasant on her
when she's not
screen
seeing it on my screen.
Her spare time. But I was sort of blown away by you being so willing to come barefaced. And I do think it reflects the relationship you have with our guest.
Well, you have to understand that Julia has felt my boobs.
Right. Okay.
She's felt them once in a hair salon in front of everybody. And then in her own living room, I have been topless. So once you've done that.
Yes, everything
else is gravy.
Now, Jess, before we bring her out, I did just want to do a little bit of admin because Jessica, I know in our last podcast, but the podcast before, you promised the listeners that you would check in and tell us how you were doing with your week-long Amish, no electricity. You were just going to read by candlelight. All lights were going off.
Yeah, well, I had
sunset.
You know,
where
it's
are
interesting.
We?
It's interesting because this is something I would have updated Julia about that I was up to, and this is going to be news to her. But I'm dabbling in the field of quantum biology. Now, it's all about, just to catch you guys up, or if you didn't hear that podcast, my friend had chronic fatigue, and then she went to all these doctors, and she found basically this field of study like quantum physics, but it's for the body. And it says basically, I don't really understand the science of it, but we should be having more vitamin D, so time in the sun, but we just need to have some sun on our light receptors on our skin. We need to be rising and getting right outside so that your body starts making melatonin when it sees the sun. So as the sun goes down, we want to start having not too much exposure to, you know, the harsh light from our light bulbs and blue light from our phones and TVs. So I decided to take it a step further and commit to a week of candlelight. Okay. So I was going to, Dan was away, do a week long.
A week of candlelight.
That lasted for one night and one night only. And I lit some candles by BB's bed, which felt extremely dangerous considering how tired I am that I could have fallen asleep. But I will say this, I am getting up with the sun. I'm getting outside. And the nights that I have willingly just looked at my phone screen, because apparently when you look at your phone, it registers to your mind that it's like high noon and cortisol races through your body. The nights that I have willingly said, fuck it, I'm just going to scroll until 11 p.m., I have felt wildly anxious. Sure. So I know that it works. I just have to implement it. So I want to give
me one
more week.
And we've got a data set of one day so far to work with.
Yeah. Okay. So give me another week. And I'm going to report back. And I haven't been having as much sun, and I definitely think I'm depressed, but I'm not sitting in the sun like I was in New Hampshire. And I'm really, really feeling the lack of that. So I don't exactly know what to do about that. I got to get outside more. But I got to get a backyard, which is why I'm also going to sell my house while I'm in London. A lot going on. Again, we're going to have to, we got to bring Julia on because these are the things she needs
to
know.
Go ahead. Please go ahead, Jessica.
Okay, America, I'm bringing on one of my favorite people in the entire world. I feel that we were divinely brought together, and thank God, because my life is so much better for it. You know her as America's sweetheart, Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Julia.
Hello. Hello. Good morning. Good afternoon. I need to quickly talk about this light thing that you're this science experiment. Okay. Because I love the fact that you say you don't really understand the science of it, but you're in it whole hog, right?
Whole hog. Here's the deal. I like to try out some of my theories and then I report back to Julia. It's not like my garbage group of friends where I tell you guys to do it before I know it works. Okay,
and then Julia, she gets us all on it, whatever the, if it's frownies, if it's whatever sort of cockamamie thing it is, and then forgets to tell us like, oh, that didn't work, or like that doctor has been arrested, like like important information, like we don't get the follow-up.
We don't get the follow-up.
Also, I heard you texted me that you're doing a keto diet now.
Well,
I mean... And is that the one where you only eat bacon and that kind of shit? All right. So that also has to stop. This is an intervention. Thank you, June. Mm-hmm. And so
I don't know how this turned out.
I think it's important for you to get a hold of yourself. Mm-hmm. And
Julia, you've been out of the country. You haven't been here, and I've been trying to get these LBs off. I'm not as disciplined as you are. I thought I would try keto, but then I realized we're not supposed to have dairy, and all I was eating was cheese. Now, Julia, let's just take everyone back to how we met, where we met, because I do love our love story.
Me too.
It's a cute meet.
I can't wait to hear it. Take me through every detail. Please know there's no detail too small.
And also know that some of my details aren't always factual. So Julia will jump in, as Lennon does, to say that didn't actually happen. But here's what I remember. So Julia was doing the movie Enough Said, which... It was one of my favorite movies in the world. I remember I saw it, the final version, when I was 9 months pregnant by myself in the theater down by the ocean. And I just cried and cried and cried and cried. And then I was so proud of Julia, somebody who wasn't even my true friend yet, of this performance. So if anyone hasn't seen this movie, I'm so jealous of you because it is really one of the most beautiful performances and films I've ever seen.
Thank you. And also, I just want to say one thing. Directed by the most extraordinary Nicole Holofcener, written and directed by her, and starring James Gandolfini.
And it was the last film he did, right, before he passed?
Yes.
And that was a beautiful... your relationship with him was so beautiful. And the set itself, Nicole Holofcener, sets the most beautiful... energy on a set. It is as if you're not acting. I mean, does she say action? She just sort of comes in and just says, you do you. And then the cameras roll.
It's pretty magical for sure. But I played a masseuse in that movie, and you were one of my clients. And you were one of my clients who would never stop talking. Interesting, isn't it? And now how you, by the way, how you've sort of co-opted that characteristic. But at any rate, the never stop talking. And so Jess had to do really just this rapid fire monologue, right, Jess?
Yes, there was no lines. Yes. It was just I was like a Brentwood mom who just couldn't stop talking about her stupid life. And
yeah
and I showed up.
hilarious.
Well, you're very kind, but what I remember is showing up and then realizing you were going to have to massage my feet because Julia actually learned from a masseuse how to do it correctly because she's a real actor. And I had not gotten a pedicure in, I don't know, 6 months. I mean, my feet looked like The Hobbit. Yes. And I had to say to her, I'm so very sorry what you're about to see and feel.
By the way, I have no memory of that.
Go,
but I'm sure, but just so you know, it made no, your hideous feet made no impression on me.
I'm so glad.
I mean, that's hurtful, but it's also...
I was horrified. But of course, also, like, Julia is the most warm. She is the warmest of the warm. And so I immediately felt like I could be myself. And then in a break, I think we were sitting on a bed. We were in somebody's actual bedroom, I think. It was like a rented house or something. And we were sitting on the bed. And Julia, you know, and I were just chatting, but we hadn't really been chatting long. And she said, "When do you think you're going to get pregnant?" And I was like, "Oh, well, you know, God, I just feel like my career like just isn't in the spot it needs to be. I should wait." And she goes, What are you going to miss out on? Like a guest spot on Gary Unmarried? Like, what the fuck? Like, get pregnant tonight. Like, it's the best thing in the world. Get pregnant." And I was like, "Oh, okay." And
for the record, I didn't scream at you.
You didn't, but you did. But you did say, "What are you waiting for?"
I did. Yeah.
And you said, "Having babies is the best thing in the world. I wish I had had 4 more." Your boys were like kind of getting out of high school, right? Or one, I think one was still in high school.
One was about to go to college, I think.
Yes.
And one was in high school. Yeah, right. Okay. Yes.
So then I was driving home after this glorious day and I called Dan and I said, "Dan, you're not going to believe it. Like, I got to meet Julia. She's so amazing." And I said, "And she said that I should get off the pill tonight." And he goes, "Okay."
Wow.
And we had like, I mean, yeah, we were going to do it at some point, but I said, "Okay." And then did we not get pregnant? And I don't mean to brag, on the first goddamn try. And it wasn't great timing for me, or so I thought, because I was going to be shooting Playing House, my pilot that I had worked so hard for. And I was going to be 3 months pregnant and wanting to throw up and not being able to fit into anything. And so then I got a little role on Veep, probably because Julia forced them to hire me. And
that's right. At gunpoint.
And I showed up in Baltimore and nobody knew. And I said, "Bitch, I'm pregnant." And she said, "Good." And I go, "And it's not good timing." And she goes, "Good. Drop it off at my house and I'll raise it as my own. I don't give a shit." Oh my God.
Yes, I did. I said, "Put it in a box and drop it off at my front door. Just like you would drop off kittens somewhere."
That's right.
Let's go.
And so then when I was pregnant and I had the baby, she would text me, "Where's my baby?" And then I would take pictures of Phoebe in a little, like, you know, if I found a box, I would put her in it and I would say. And so that was the beginning, right, Julia? And then I don't know what, you know, it's like when you court, I was courting you really, but I just loved you so much. I said, I gotta have her. And I don't know if this is inappropriate, but I'm just going to text her every so often. And then I don't know. We just, almost like in the Victorian times, we became friends over text. Didn't you feel like we were?
Yes, we became friends over text. And the work thing helped too, because you did a couple episodes of Veep, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yes, we had so much fun at Veep. Yes.
So much fun. I've never laughed so hard in my fucking life. And then texting. And I think, did we start hiking around then too? Or was that later?
Hiked,
I don't really remember.
We might have hiked. And then I remember you sent like bagels or something to my house, I think when the baby was born. And my dad, who had done very little of any kind of childcare at that point or help, he just kept saying, "God, that cream cheese that came with Julia's bagels was so fucking good. What a class act." And he'll still say, "What a class act that Julia is. Remember those bagels?" I'm like, "Yes, Dad." I was like busy trying to breastfeed while you were talking about.
Trust your dad to like focus on that.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
He'd wake up every morning like, where am I going to get, what am I going to get from Bay Cities? You want a godmother or a godfather? My mother was like, I swear to God, if you mention the word fucking hoagies in this house one more time, Michael. He's like, what? But anyway, so then I got the big C, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if the next time I remember seeing you was in, that was the thing, Julia. We kept just getting our hair done at the same day. We were on the same cycle. Mm-hmm. And that can sometimes be a 6-hour experience. And so we were really like, we were on a ride there.
So long there.
It's so long, but always perfect. And so I had gotten my boobs, and I remember I felt like a real alien out in the world. It was probably the first time I was getting my hair cut, I think post chemo probably. And I said, I got these new boobs, Julia. They're so great. Do you want to feel them? Do you want to see them? And then I said, take a look. And then I said, you've really got to feel them because they are amazing.
They feel real. They totally feel real. I can say that now.
I felt them too.
Yeah.
Everybody felt them, seen them, experienced them. And then you got diagnosed, and I will never forget, with the big C.
Or just... With cancer, fucking cancer.
Fucking cancer. You got breast cancer.
Fucking C, yeah.
And you called me, which we didn't usually talk on the phone unless I had like a stupid work question or something. And I remember I was in the farmer's market at the Grove and I saw your number and what did I say when I answered the phone? Like, oh no, or oh God?
I think you said something like, oh God, don't tell me, or something like that. I can't really remember. The whole time is like a blur.
Yes, mm-hmm. I like knew. And we won't spend the whole time on cancer because that's a snooze, but I knew for some reason that had happened. And so then, I got to go through that with you. And I will say that you were so helpful to me, Julia, because I had felt so alone during that. Like I was the only loneliest unicorn who had to go through this awful thing, and actually going through it with you, made me feel like less of a freak. I didn't want you to have, I wouldn't go back and have you have it just so that I could feel less alone. But you know what I'm saying? It felt like I totally was less alone.
And I have to say, and it's interesting just because I have to say that your help to me during that time, which was pretty in-depth help, you know, I mean, it was, and practical help about how to get, I think we both did the cold cap and we both, what meds worked, what meds didn't, right. Reactions, nurses, right. Doctors, the whole mental health. And you were so helpful to me with all of that. You were like my guru who had been through it. And it's not even quantifiable how helpful it was to me. And I'm so grateful to you for it. And then what's interesting is that after I, you know, got through it, people started to come to me, various people, and I did what you did for me, for them, I'm sure not as well as you did, but I did my best. And I had the exact same experience. It was the most therapeutic thing to walk through the process with other people. Do I know?
That's crazy.
It's crazy, but I mean, it's kind of a game changer to a certain extent. And by the way, the other thing is because I was in production on Veep when I got diagnosed, you know, normally I never in a million years would have said anything about that publicly. I would have made it private, kept it private. But because we were in production, I obviously had, you know, we had to shut down for almost a year or a year. And so I had to make it public, which I did with hesitancy.
Yes.
I didn't want to, but I had to. But that was the upshot of that was people reaching out and then being able to give back in that same way. And so that was, you know, who knew? I didn't see that one coming.
No, and I remember I kept it very secret and I didn't tell anybody except for my close girlfriends. And it was like, I was like, don't tell anybody. I didn't want anyone to see me as weak or I thought they wouldn't laugh with me anymore or think I was funny if I was this sad person. Or I felt like, I felt a lot of shame. I really did about getting cancer, that I had weirdly, something was wrong with me. I think I've always been somebody who's very much wanted to be like one of the gang. Like I never like to really, well, now it's, that's not the case because I'm a mother, but I used to never like to be alone. I like us all. If we could all sleep in the same room, that'd be great when we're on vacation, all eight of us, you know? So to be the lone wolf felt really bad to me. But when I had to announce it for Playing House, I was terrified. I remember saying to Lennon, like, as we sent out the press release, I was like, well, this was a terrible mistake. And she goes, well, it's a little late for that. Like, so Lennon, I was like, she's like, we shot a whole season about it. I was like, God damn it, Lennon. But same thing happened. So many people reached out. And then you feel like I'm not alone and I can help you and you can help me. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's what women do for each other. That is the power of being a woman. And I'm so fucking glad we're women.
Yeah, totally. And by the way, I was going to also mention, you know, it's interesting you say this sort of shame thing. Isn't that an interesting reaction? I think that's particularly a female reaction. What did I do wrong? What did I do wrong?
Yes.
And believe me, I continue to think that to a certain extent to this day. Like, what things did I do in my life to bring this onto myself?
Mm. Yes.
I think that's I think that's very much the domain of being a girl. I don't know. What do you think, June?
I never thought about it.
I forgot.
That.
I was just listening. I was watching a television show. Honestly,
sorry.
No, I was like, I forgot really that I was sharing makeup. A part of the conversation.
Yeah, because this is the shittiest television show you have ever seen.
I could watch forever. No, I think that's so true. That guilt is so available to women, you know, and I think especially to mothers, like if you want to feel guilty, there's a million and one ways that you can, because none of this has been set up to really support women. And so there's ample opportunity. One of the things I'm thinking about too is, you know, what you were saying, Julia, about how, and Jessica, like you are healing is available to us when we offer it to others. And that's, and like this idea of kind of being able to reparent yourself and get the things that you either got or maybe didn't get too, and then offer it, and how, you know, satisfying that is. I'm thinking about Jess, when you are saying that about Julia telling you to have a baby, I don't know if you remember this, but you told me to have a baby.
I did?
Mm-hmm.
No,
before you had one,
that?
You did. And I think, I don't know how you feel, Julia, but for Jessica and I, I'm sure that that moment for her was super impactful, because we did not have a lot of, I didn't know who to look to. And especially in an industry, talk about like the availability of feeling shitty about yourself or feeling like poverty stricken. Like, how dare I get something for me? Aren't I supposed to be available at all times for what?
That's what I thought.
Everybody else wants and needs. And you, Jess, when we were doing that ABC show, you got the part and I didn't, remember? And then I came
up
back
again.
And I was a guest star in the first episode.
Yeah,
sorry to bring it up
that.
Again. But we sat in the trailer and you said, I was complaining about something, a job or something. And you said, like, lady, this ain't it. You know, like, you don't remember this? You said,
I know,
like,
because I
this
didn't,
isn't
I wasn't
real
even
life.
Pregnant
like,
yet.
It's wonderful and fun, but we have a whole other thing waiting for us. And turns out we did. And that, yes, it's hard to manage and all that stuff, but like, actually our work, I think for both of us got better.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like everything got better.
Everything got better.
Everything got better. So
I think also
I don't know
people-
if Julia had told you that at that time, or I don't know where it was on the timeline, but you were the one, Jess, who said that to me. And I was like, oh, fuck, what am I waiting for?
Well, I had to then go and learn some hard lessons, though. But this might be going back to my shame, because I felt like I gave the cancer to myself by working too hard on season two of Playing House. Like, I had a baby and she was one and a half, you know, and I was shooting 18 hours a day and I pushed myself too hard. And, you know, I was crying every day in the makeup trailer because I was so tired. And so I felt like I've told myself the story that that's what gave me cancer.
But I think that's I also think that's like the toxic wellness culture that we are in, which is like, mm-hmm. should something bad happen to you, it's you are not taking care of yourself. And those of us who have survived cancer are survivors, and the percentages that we don't get to talk to because they're dead didn't survive. I mean, there's so much language that's so horrible. You know, sometimes shitty things happen.
Tell me about it. I mean, it's all over the place. Right.
And that's it.
Yeah. And I also, so I felt like I had to learn, I did learn that lesson when I did get sick. I had to go like, okay, I need to not, I mean, regardless of whether it didn't give me the cancer, I had a gene for it, but it didn't help. And I also really, what I really kind of looked at was I love working so much, but it isn't worth feeling physically destroyed over. That's not, you're not getting a better take when everybody's there for 18 hours. And happiness isn't something to happen after you wrap, because your baby is only your baby for that little precious time, and you're going to, and then they're going to be out of your house, and you don't want to ever look back and go, I missed that because I was busy chasing this other stupid fucking thing that will let you down ultimately. Although just like you, Julia and June, I love working. I love when a show is great and people make me laugh. God, I love it, but it's not worth abandoning your body or your family for.
Or your mental health.
Or your mental health, which...
Speaking of mental health.
Yes.
If you could just move your chair away, I need to see the upholstered chair behind you because I think I might love that fabric. Sorry.
Really? Because I was going to reupholster this. Do you love it?
Yeah, I think I do.
Well, I can get it for you, but then I'm going to leave it.
Okay, let me see the pillow on the chair. Obviously, guys, you're going to have to cut this out from the show.
No, this stays.
But wait, no, we're not actually. This let just me see came this. With it. So this is, have I sent you Elsie Green?
Website? You're not going to redo that. That's divine.
Okay, I'm keeping it, but I have to redo the bed. Everything's a mess in here.
Fine.
And I'm getting
redo
ready
the
to
bed. I can't see it. I'll take your word for it, but the chairs remain.
They don't look the like an old lady's chairs. Dan, I think Dan said something about it looking like an old lady.
Well, okay, I defer to Dan, of course, because...
No, don't defer to Dan.
I'm sorry. I don't defer to Dan. I'm going to override Dan because I think this can go contemporary or traditional. I think it goes either way just because it's kind of simplistic.
I'm going to keep it. She's you know what? Spoken. I'm going to keep it. Why not? So, Julia, there's so much we want to talk to you about. But one thing is, okay, so the one thing is about Julia, too, is that she loved being a mom so much. I think a lot of women love to complain about being a mom, but you fucking loved it. And you continue to love it. And your children love you. Your children.
Well, you have to ask them. You'd have to ask them. I'm not going to speak for them.
I can tell.
But I really like my kids a lot. They're funny and nice. Yeah. I mean, don't we all like our children? I mean, it has been a lovely thing. Obsessed, right? Obsessed.
Yes.
I love creating space for, because there's so much that's hard about it, right? But I mean, we've talked about this before, Jessica. It's like, sometimes it's actually hard to be like, oh yeah, I'm experiencing joy, like that's existential and that, like I've never known before. And I'd have, I would have all the children in the world if they would have me. It's the best thing. It is. It is the best thing ever.
Julia, it's so much fun. So you have adult men now as your children.
I do.
They are two of the best looking people I've seen, and I'm much too old for them. But I have put my hat in the ring. If I
you
ever
have need you've done that a number of times.
I think you're being asked to stop.
They're so good looking. But Julia, how did you like when they were in their teenage years? And June, you have two boys too, and so I have a girl who you know will probably tell me to fuck off when she's 14. But how did you maintain like closeness with them while letting them also be their own person? Like, how did you maintain being a person that they didn't find annoying/hated in their?
I sort of, you know, when I when they found me annoying, I sort of enjoyed that a little bit. I mean, there was something about that teenage brain. But I don't think they found me super annoying. I don't think I'm looking back on this time. But they weren't like crazy moody or anything for the most part. They did get quiet. They started, you know, there was a, because I guess maybe because not to be gender, whatever it's called, but as boys, I mean, they didn't get mean and throwing things. They just sort of
went in. And was that really painful, Julia, when they did that? Like, did you feel sad, like when they were growing apart? Like, did it feel like, oh God, I want to still be in the inner circle?
No, I mean, what was sad for me was really when they left home to go to college. Yeah. That was the most gutting to me. But no, you know, I just sort of found a way to stay around them without, again, I wish they were here to say if they felt this way, but to stay around them without bugging them. Like, we drove our youngest to school all the way through senior year. Mm-hmm. And he would sit in the back, and sometimes he'd have a friend, and sometimes there would be quiet, and sometimes I found that conversations in the car are very, very good. I think it has to. Yeah, actually, that's a good takeaway. I think keep driving them places. Always be available to drive them everywhere they want to go.
Okay.
Because it's a good way of connecting.
They're just sort of looking out the window, huh?
Right. It's sort of like, you know, you don't have to have eye contact.
Yeah.
So maybe certain things are come out a little more in a more fluid manner than they might otherwise. We've always had adventures and stuff. I mean, they're still around. I just wait. Henry's been here all week, and Charlie's coming up this weekend. So, I mean,
that's
these
all
boys
I want.
Are.
I just want them never to leave. I want to make it so that they never want to leave. But also you want them
so
to
now
leave.
Here's a piece of advice about that.
Yes.
Make sure their beds are always crazy comfortable. Sheets, high thread count always.
These are the bits of information.
Yes. Always. So they want to come back to their bed, come back to the house. Make sure that's always happening. And that you have food in the house that they like. Always have the food in the house that they like,
always,
you know,
have
for
the
most
food.
Part.
And did you have the house, Julia, that the kids hung out at? Because I always feel like you want to have, maybe if you can, dig a pool quickly before they turn teenager. You don't want them hanging in someone else's. Well, we don't have basements out here, but finished basements. That's where all the bad things go down, in someone else's finished basement.
But that house, and this is a very sort of West Side thing to say and privileged thing to say, but we bought that house. It didn't have a pool. We didn't put a pool in until the kids were older. Obviously, they knew how to swim. But it was for that very reason, because we wanted the kids to come to our house to play. Yeah. So we dug a pool. We put that in the backyard. There's a basketball hoop in the driveway.
Yep.
Let's go. Let's make this house
a good
place to hang.
Because then you get more time with them, and you get to have eyes on who's there, what's happening.
Interesting. Well, no, I was just thinking, I have felt having two boys until they tell me otherwise.
How old are your boys?
My youngest just turned 5 on Monday. 5 and 7. And my youngest just turned 5, and I actually like fell into like a bit of a depression that day. But
no, don't waste your time with that. Don't. He's still such a baby. Oh my God, Jim, seriously, you're going to look back.
I will really try.
They're both babies.
Well, that's the thing. It's such a good time, you know, we're in a good time with them. And yeah, I just don't want it to end. But anyway, what I was going to say is I do feel like having two boys has helped me heal some of my own past issues with men. Like seeing just how beautiful these boys are and how boys are so precious and perfect, and how like our culture can shape them into, you know, a part of a system that's really toxic and damaging, but that's not who they are. And that's not who these individual boys are. These individual boys and girls are absolutely perfect. It's really helped me kind of see this, the patriarchy, as something that's not just super damaging to women that I've bumped up against, that so many of us have bumped up against, but really quite damaging to boys as well, and how much they have suffered under it. So I don't know, Julia, has having boys and raising boys like complicated your feelings about gender?
I always assumed that I would have girls because I came from so many sisters and no brothers. And so I just thought, oh, for sure I'm having girls. And then it was not girls. And I was like, what the hell is this? You know, it was like a totally different experience that I am forever grateful for. Yeah. I mean, really. And I'm like the mother of boys. It's such a funny thing. But it feels kind of, I don't know. It feels sort of powerful. I like it. I really do. I feel.
Knowing you both, I think you're the perfect version of a mom to boys. Like, it makes perfect sense to me that you both have boys. I don't know why, but it just does. You're supposed to have a bunch of boys running around your house. And I know, June, you definitely wanted to have a girl at one point because you're so close with your sisters.
I'm so close with my girlfriends. Yeah. I mean, when the doctor first told me I was having a boy, I cried hysterically to the point where he was like, are we making a different decision today? Like, is this going to go? I was so devastated. And now I'm like, oh, it's all I want. Give me all of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you're sent the baby soul that you're supposed to have. I really do. You know, I struggled obviously with having with the breast cancer, making it so I could only have one. And it wasn't until just recently I'd sort of let that go because she's perfect, you know, and all I have to do is like send a picture to Julia. And she's like, she's perfect. I mean, what are you going to do? She's perfect. She don't need another
perfect.
One. But it's nice to kind of settle into that feeling of like what is meant for you is what you have. And that's a nice feeling.
First, I wanted to share, Julia, that when I was postpartum with my second, my dad was very sick and ended up passing away a couple weeks after I gave birth to my second. But in that time from having the baby, and I knew my father was in an ICU in New York, and just I couldn't travel, the C-section, whatever. And I was consuming Veep. I had never seen it before. And I'm always a solid like decade behind very popular shows. Like, and I was texting people like, have you seen this? Like, and friends like, were so disturbed. Like, yeah, when it came out. But I consumed it. I mean, I just wanted to share this with you. It during that time, for whatever reason, I locked into that show and your performance in a way that was just, I couldn't believe what I was seeing, what was available to me, what you were doing, how amazing this character was. And I spent, honestly, that postpartum haze and sort of depression and dark time. And I remember turning to Paul and saying, like, comedy, this comedy show is lifting me. It's the only thing I'm looking forward to. But it truly was. And I turned to him and I was like pumping and, you know, and I was like, what, comedy saves lives? Like, I was so, because it really did serve such and I watched the whole thing in that time.
Obsessively. Well, you didn't watch the whole thing because then you came
then I was on
it.
I watched what I could up until that point.
Yes, and you were brilliant in it. Well, brilliant. As was your lovely husband, I might point out. brilliant.
Always is.
Yes.
But
so, I mean, give me a break.
I just wanted to share that. It just, yeah, it really did.
I'm glad. Because postpartum's a bitch and grief is a bitch. And so anything that can lighten that load, I'm happy to have played a part in that.
Yay. Huge part.
Yeah, good.
I think that's the... I think after all the crap, well, and obviously once you turn 40, I think everything just sort of starts to get really real. But like after that, it really becomes less about yourself. Like, oh, I hope everybody thinks I'm funny. Like, I don't really give a fuck. But if somebody says like, hey, that helped me out of a dark time. And people do, they DM you to say, hey, you know, you might not have known this. That's the only thing that matters. Two things. One, that you get to work with your friends. And people yes. that you love. That's it.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Right.
That's it. Number two, that you don't have to work somewhere really shitty away from your people that you love. That's number two. And three is that hopefully what you do makes somebody else's day just a little better. That feels like you've won the, you know.
The trifecta.
The trifecta. It's hard to get, though. It's hard. It certainly is hard to get.
Yeah. It is hard to get. It's hard to find anything that's, you know, good. To do. It's hard to find good material, God knows.
But you've done it three times, and or I mean more than that. You've been in so many good things. But did I hear this right, Julia? Did you make the decision to do multicam when your kids were a certain age because you wanted to be around? Can you tell me about how you, because you are the hardest working person I know. I mean, you really make me feel like a lazy piece of shit just knowing how much more work you do in a day than I ever would.
But no. Give me a break.
It's true.
Well, first of all, drop that feeling. I don't work that hard. But I, okay. Yes, it was very, the multicam experience was a really good thing to have when my, and you know, I know multicam really isn't around much anymore, I guess. I mean, I guess there's a little of it. But when I was doing, well, actually both Seinfeld and then I did this show, Old Christine, and in both circumstances, it was really, I mean, it's still work. And you're still, you know, it's a full-time job, but the hours are pretty, manageable as opposed to doing a single camera show, which is much less manageable from an hour, from a daily output point of view. And specifically on Old Christine, it was run by like tons of women. So everybody was like, let's go. We'll start this early so everybody can get home to, you know, run carpool or whatever. And that was kind of fantastic, I have to say.
It's amazing.
Carrie Lizer ran that show and she was and is a stone cold genius. So, yeah.
How long did that, how long and how old were your children when that was happening?
Okay, now that's a good question. One was in high school, middle school and high school. And the other would have been in elementary school and then middle school, sort of.
That's a good time. That's a really good time to be around and have eyes on things, because that's sort of when things can take a turn. Did you feel like after that they needed you a little less, so it was okay to go and do something like Veep, which the hours were kind of crazy?
I think if I hadn't had the husband that I had, I could never have done Veep for real. Cause I mean, he picked up, I mean, he's already a very, involved parent. I mean, like incredibly so, but, I had, because Veep was the first, 4 years of Veep were shot in Baltimore, Maryland. And, so
it's tough to be away.
it's tough to be away and
have only so much crab available. I had a crab cake in the airport once on the way back home from Veep. Really rolled the dice on that. It was delicious.
Yeah. I was going to ask you if you got vomiting and diarrhea about an hour and a half later.
Because
no, you're fine.
If you're there, you can get good crab anywhere. Come on now.
All right. Okay. But yeah, I mean, I couldn't have done it without that man because our youngest was in high school at the time. And that was sad for me not to be around as much, but I've made a deal so that I went home. I think I got it to like every 10 days I was going home. I mean, it was hard,
but we got it done. Yeah.
And then we moved it to LA, which was also really nice.
Oh, that must've been the real and true dream. And Julia, you met Brad in college.
I did. Your husband.
So I met Dan and I met Dan in college too. That's a wild ride to be with somebody that long.
Right?
What is it like for you? Because with Dan, I'm like, oh, he's seen every version of me and some of which I'd like to forget. You know, they really see you through a lot of metamorphoses, you know?
Totally. And in fact,
growing up.
Funny. Totally. I mean, we were children. We were children.
I
mean, we started dating when I was 21, and so he would have been 24. Jesus Christ.
That's crazy.
When we started dating. And he, every now and again, he'll bring up, I'm an absolute compulsive neat freak around my house, and I like everything organized a certain way and done and things put away and blah, 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 blah. That wasn't always the case. And when I was in college and in high school, I was an 100% slob.
How did that come about? I want to become not a slob. June and I very much want to become not a slob. We both are versions of, when we're not slobs, but we ain't keeping it together. We don't want to be slobs anymore.
Something happened when I got my own apartment and started to become invested in how it sort of looked. And I wanted, something sort of changed. I don't know. I became a little more, I don't know. But he likes to bring that up. Every now and again, he'll bring that up. But when I'm like, oh, these boys never pick their shit up. And he goes, do you remember? Do you remember what you were like? And I went, yeah. I mean, how long are we going to be playing? That was 40 years ago now.
Julia, question for you. Did you have a hard time asking for help before you got sick? And then did it beat that out of you? Because I did have a hard time saying I needed help. And so help was really foisted on me by my girlfriends. And I wondered if you were similar in that way.
Yes, I think I was, because I sort of retreated a little bit, you know? But like, I know that a bunch of people sort of gathered to sort of drop meals off. And that was and I was resistant, like, oh, no, I don't need that. I'm fine. That was something that was an adjustment. And then I made the adjustment. And then it was sort of nice to just receive. It was nice to receive. There are certain things weren't so nice to receive, you know, but people sometimes, the thing about, not to bring this all back to cancer, but the thing about getting sick, really sick, scary sick, is that sometimes people don't know how to respond. And so they do or say things that you find that are just,
they're wrong.
Un-motherfucking believable.
Yes. We had a couple texts back and forth about that. And you had a list of complaints that you were keeping, I remember. Do you remember your list of complaints?
I did. I still have that list.
Do you? Because at one point you lost it. And then one of your complaints was that you could not find the fucking complaint list. Do you remember that?
Well, I can take that off. Although actually I haven't looked for it recently. But
complaints about what people were, their missteps.
Complaints during my illness, you know, I mean, apart from the fucking illness itself, complaints beyond the actual illness, it's just the ripple effect of the illness. Mm. And then, of course, the people who you are angry at.
Yes. What are the things, Julia, if we can put it out there as like a PSA? If somebody is sick in your life, these are the things that you should do, you shouldn't do to help them.
Well, one thing you shouldn't do is ask them what you can do to help them.
That's right. Just do it. Remember when I dropped out those fries? You said, I don't want those fries. Sometimes people are going to tell you they don't want those fries, but they really do want those fries.
They do want the fries. So just do it. And don't make me tell you how to help me. I can't handle that because I don't feel well enough. Mm. So there's one.
Don't cry don't cry more than I'm crying. In fact, if I'm crying, don't you cry at all. And in fact, don't cry at all. I don't want to see you crying. Because if I see you more afraid, if I see you afraid that I'm going to die, well, then that's fucking awful. So if you're going to cry, go do it by yourself. I don't want to see you cry.
Right. There's that.
Unless I want you to cry just a little bit. Because you feel it with me. Like every so often, Lennon would say, just like, well, a little bit of mistiness.
Yeah.
Well up a little, but not like a well up. Don't well up like, I think you're going to die. And that's why I'm crying. Well up because you're like, I'm sorry, my friend is feeling so much pain. Right?
Exactly. Yes. Okay. That's okay. Reaffirming. That can have a reaffirming effect.
That's right.
Another good pointer is don't give. Don't give the ill person.
No.
Oh, no.
Are you going to say the specifics?
I am. I'm going to say one specific. Don't give somebody with cancer a cancer Barbie.
I couldn't imagine what it was, but I didn't think it was that. Oh, my God.
Don't do that.
The wig comes off.
No.
Do that. We had don't a lot of that. Julia and I did receive some odd gifts. I will tell you. I don't want, and this sounds terrible. I don't want a prayer shawl. I don't want to know someone was knitting me a prayer shawl. And I don't think the person who knitted it for me knows how to use a podcast, so I don't have to worry about that. But I don't want to hear that a group of strangers are praying for me. That makes me feel very concerned about my own well-being. Right. Okay. Yeah. I don't want it.
Uh-huh. Okay. I have a long list of these kind, very specific gifts.
There were some really weird. You got a lot more.
I got
Does Mattel make a cancer Barbie?
This is the thing. They might. I don't know. Okay. I couldn't. Okay. It was like, and I put it away. I was like,
oh. What about my, Julia, didn't you have my L.L. Bean bag that Lindsay Sloan made me, the FCK? Lindsay Sloan, who we had on the podcast, she called up L.L. Bean. And because a good gift for someone is a big boat bag that they can put all their stuff for the hospitals. Because you have to when you go into chemo, you have to bring a boatload of shit. Right.
Right.
Your warm blanket, your water, your snacks, whatever. And so Lindsay called up L.L. Bean and said, I want to put fuck, F-U-C-K. That's what I want to put on this boat bag. And they said, we can't. We can't put a curse word on. So she was like, ugh. So it said F-C-K, right? To say fuck it or just F-C-K? Anyway, so I
just F-C-K. That was very useful. I used it every 3 weeks when I went.
And
very
then we passed it on to my neighbor, yes, who was my surrogate mom. Yeah. And anyway, so that's a great gift. That's a great gift. Practical stuff great like gift. That is great. Put soft pajamas, anything like kind of like soft and lovely, you know, that's a great gift. Totally. Ice cream, great gift. Any kind of, cookies and cakes. If you feel like eating them, you don't. And if you don't, someone else in your house will. So
correct.
Someone know that somebody is stress eating in your house. It's either you or your loved one. So that will be welcome. Mm-hmm. And I also think putting a reminder on your phone just to check in and always say in your text, you don't have to write me back, but I'm just texting to tell you that I love you. Mm-hmm. I love to hear that. Did you like that?
Loved.
People did that for you? Mm-hmm. Loved it.
Loved. Mm-hmm. Loved it.
I loved it. Well, I have to tell you, Julia, I hope you know, and I think you do, that I love you. You're it for me. I love you so much.
I love you, Jess. You are the greatest. You have no idea. You are the greatest.
You have no idea. And I'm just so glad that you came into my life. I don't think I would have the daughter I have if it weren't for you telling me to get off the pill and get
you mean my daughter?
You know? Yes.
You mean my daughter?
Fine. Honestly, go.
I got a box
sent her to you.
I got a box sitting outside.
I mean, listen,
front door. let's
Jess
go.
Jess has admitted that, like, in her will, she has a list of people who are, you know, I guess in line to take care of her daughter. And she hasn't contacted those people. So who knows?
Like, you could be on that list.
You could be on that list.
Send her, you know, like in the old days where you would send your daughter to another woman to bring to the continent, and they would go on like a grand tour of Europe. I would love it for Bibi to see Europe with you, Julia, and just come back a little more, you know,
sophisticated.
Refined. Yeah, a little more sophisticated, a room of one's own. You know what I mean? You'd take a little apartment in Florence, you know, and teach her how to be a woman in the world, you know?
Like that wonderful movie, my favorite movie of all time, A Room with a View.
That's what I meant. Not a room of one's own. The Room with the View. Yes. That's exactly what I'm thinking about.
Yes.
I've watched that movie a million times. Okay, so that's what we're going to do. And also, I do think we should go to Greece. I have a lot of different plans, but I think we need to take our relationship to a foreign country.
Oh.
Okay.
I like that idea. Oh, how exciting.
Julia, thank you so much for joining us.
You guys, this has been so... I feel like we could keep talking for hours. And I'm sure... Yeah, I mean, I really do. So thank you for including me in this wonderful show of yours. And I'm so delighted to talk with both of you. I love you both. Really, honestly, I think you're both magnificent. You magnificent human being.
We love you.
Thanks, Julia. Thank you for joining us. Julia.
Thank you. Love you guys. Bye.
Love you.
Bye.
The Deep Dive is produced by Jessica St. Clair, June Diane Raphael, and Earwolf. Our producer is Cody Fisher and sound engineer Jordan Duffy. You can listen to our ad-free and bonus episodes on Stitcher Premium. And for a free one-month trial of Stitcher, use code DEEPDIVE. And remember, the best way to support the show is to rate and review.
And a huge thank you to Anne Geddes for her beautiful photo that she allowed us to use for our cover art. Please head over to AnneGeddesBaby.com and download her new app, which is a safe place you can upload and store all of your precious images of your children and share them with friends and family, plus much more.
We'll see you next time.